Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Leadership from the Heart. Today, we have with us Craig Taylor. He's a cybersecurity expert and an entrepreneur with over 30 years of experience protecting organizations from digital threats, from Fortune 500s to small businesses. As a co-founder and CEO of CyberHoot, Craig brings a unique blend of psychology and tech to the field, pioneering a positive reinforcement approach to cybersecurity training. His mission is to eliminate risky behaviors and build a culture where security is second nature. Craig, welcome to the show. How are you?
Rami, that was awesome. I love that introduction. Thank you for writing that up. I'm great. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for being here again. Let's jump right in. You know, you have a degree in psychology and you have a career in cybersecurity, and those two fields don't really ever intersect or cross paths. But how does your understanding of like the human behavior shape your approach to digital risk management, since that's what cybersecurity is?
Thank you for that. I mean, it's a great question. And I think it's one that isn't asked often enough, right? We've got all these technical solutions out there to protect our companies. Researchers and cybersecurity firms like Verizon that study breach data, they all conclude the same thing, that breaches are most often tied to the human in the companies that we all work at. You know, 90 plus percent of the time, it's a phishing attack or of an email, lack of email, or not email, but password hygiene. The human condition is what needs to be the focus of cyber literacy training, cyber education, and cyber defense. Resiliency is not built with yet another SIM or SOC or something else in the mix, technical wise. It's the humans that we have to help understand and protect our businesses better.
Yeah. And so what is one unique way, or what are some ways that you suggest or that you recommend to companies of doing that?
Well, this is where the challenges begin, Rami, because almost all the solutions on the market have a focus on reducing bad behaviors. What's a bad behavior? Well, if we know that phishing is the number one risk that every company makes, and phishing happens when you get an email and you're convinced to click on a link in that email, right? Against your better judgment, or maybe without thinking. Cybersecurity researchers said, well, we have to stop that. They don't think of the bigger picture of stop it, but how? If we just punish people for clicking, that'll work, right? It doesn't. 80 years of psychological theory, right? Going back to my university days, 80 years of psychology research has proven that if you want to truly change behaviors in the long run, not just today, but tomorrow, next week, and you want your employees to internalize why they're changing their behaviors and maybe build a culture so that all new people fall into that wonderful culture of prevention, you need to reward the good behaviors. In psychology, I forget the author of this statement, but she said punishment only reduces bad behaviors. It does not eliminate it. But worse still, it does not teach the good behaviors that need to replace it. right? So if you just punish people for clicking on fake email phishing tests that you might run as your typical, this is how the normal industry works, right? They send out an email to your inbox, and if you aren't paying close attention or you miss it and you click on that link, you open that email, you click on that link, you fail the test. And what are the consequences? Well, you have to watch a 30 to 40 minute video sometimes. You have a meeting with your boss or HR. You might even in some companies have a three strikes rule where if you do it three times, you're terminated, right? Like this is horrible, horrible ways to run a business because it only teaches fear, anxiety, and doubt in your inbox. It does not teach you why and how phishing works. Right? You need to reward your employees when they go through an interactive, you know, email example. Like we've built a platform that we call it Hootfish. It presents to the end user an email that says, Rami, it's time for you to take your phishing test. But don't worry, it's an open book test. So if you don't know what you're looking at, we can help you in the moment to teach you what hackers are doing with the sending domain. Why are hackers sending you an urgent appeal? Or an emotional appeal, they're doing that to get you to react without thinking, right? So be aware of that. And instead of reacting, respond thoughtfully, carefully. And so we walk you through an email with 6 or 7 puzzle pieces, and you need to answer, is this safe or suspicious looking? And we give you some help on the answers in real time. And you begin to build a rubric. To coin an educational term, you begin to understand how to put these puzzle pieces together so you have a crystal clear picture of what phishing is. And that feeds you for a lifetime of secure, confident, efficient email processing, not just work-wise, professionally, but personally. I've been stopped on the streets of my home city, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and I've had people say, Craig, you know what? I got an email in my personal Gmail account the other day. I had just done your Hootfish, and I knew instantly it was an attack. So I might have clicked on it a week or a month ago or whatever the time frame was, but I knew to delete it. And I want to thank you for that because now I'm confident processing email. Instead, I was being, you know, anxious or nervous or scared of email because I just didn't understand it.
Yeah, let's take, I want to explain to the listeners what phishing is. So what
P-H-I-S-H. Yeah. Phishing is when you have an email that is sent to you that pretends to be one thing, a demand for you to take an action or an urgency around a bill, like you haven't paid your bill for Netflix, for example, and they're going to threaten you to turn off your Netflix if you don't pay the bill right away. And here's your link to log in and do that. Well, what happens is it wasn't really sent from Netflix. If you look at the domain name in the competent hacker world, they'll add an S to the end of Netflix or they'll drop an I in Netflix. And that's really sneaky because people will just glance at it and say, well, it's Netflix. It's got to be legit. And then they'll click, they'll try to log into their Netflix account. And what they've just done is they've handed the hackers their Netflix username and password. Or they'll go to the payment page of Netflix. And it's actually the hacker's payment page, and the hacker will collect your credit card and your full address and your name and your CVV and all that stuff. And then they'll go buy things and send them to their PO box where they'll recover them and they'll close that down before any law enforcement gets involved. So they're stealing our data. They're causing really big problems by getting us to click on things we shouldn't because we just haven't been taught how to fish. So yeah. That's phishing.
Yeah, I'd say that just with my... you know, the knowledge that I do have, if you ever do get an email from a Netflix or Chase or whoever, it's best not to click on the link in the email, but yet go to the app that you already have that is secure and try to do whatever they're telling you to do from there. Mm-hmm. Just because it's, you know, that to your point, right? The link is taking you likely to their site that looks just like Netflix.
You're absolutely right. So it's never a bad idea to use the app. It's never a bad idea to go to Google and yeah, find the domain and do it. However, it's often unnecessary because you're wasting 1, 2, 3, 5 minutes to do something 100%. You had no business having to do. 100%. All you really ought to do is learn how to fish. And if you go hover over the sender and it doesn't have the exact Netflix.com domain, you're being phished. Or in other cases, you know, this happens a lot with business email compromise, Rami, where one person will have lost access to their email account, and the hackers will get in and they'll scrape it for every person that that person has ever emailed before. And if they're in finance, often this targets finance people, they'll then craft this really believable invoice email that they'll send to every last, you know, 50, 100, 200 people. They'll send this invoice, and the invoice is a booby trap file, or it will open and prompt you to go visit a malicious website or steal your credentials, and they'll perpetrate this breach of credentials over and over again. So if you get an email that looks like it's from someone legitimate and it doesn't seem right or it's out of the ordinary, call the person before you click or open anything from them, because you might have found yourself, I in the last 10 years, I've probably called 25, 30 people to tell them, I think your email's been compromised because you're sending invoices and you never do that. So you need to, and they're like, yeah, I know. Don't click on it. Don't click on it. You know, but I know what to look for, and I'm hell bent on teaching everyone else how to avoid these problems through positivity, through rewards.
Right. So why don't companies automatically adopt this positive reinforcement that we know works? What have you learned is the resistance behind it?
Well, there's no empirical evidence that says this is better than that today. There actually is a really good study out of the University of Zurich, Switzerland from 2020. They studied 15,000 people in a phishing simulator, the traditional method that we're complaining about here that punishes bad behaviors. And after the study of, it was 20 months, 14,000 people, they remeasured them on how they did on phishing tests, right? If they clicked on phishing links or not. And they concluded, surprisingly, that people that had gone through this long 20-month training program of fake email phish testing and education, they actually clicked on more phishing links in the future, not less. So their locus of control was external. They didn't have the why and the how, and they were just made fearful of clicking on links. But when there was something really appealing to them, they still clicked on it. Okay. So it doesn't work. That's empirically proven. Now, the positive reinforcement, it's proven to work at behavior change and behavior modification, but psychology and cybersecurity aren't viewed in the same circles, right? We need to bring those circles and overlap them and say, you know, we know that positive reinforcement works for behavior change, long-term intrinsic development of skill sets through rewards, no different than if you train a dog with treats, right? Hurricane won America's Got Talent. It was a dog and his dog trainer. The audience loved it. The dog loved it. The trainer loved it. They were all having a wonderful time with these amazing skills that the dog had learned through treats, through positive reinforcement and treats, right? That works, and we know it works. Punishing does not work any different than if there's a squirrel or a rabbit across the road and you've got a shock collar on your dog, the dog will go do the calculus. He'll be like, wow, I'm going to get zapped really bad, but I really want that squirrel. I'm going to go for it. And he just tears off across the road. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt. Employees are no different. If they see a really appealing phishing test for Taylor Swift tickets for their daughter or their niece or their nephew, they're going to click because they just want to treat their family or treat somebody, and they just don't have the knowledge as to how can I tell that it wasn't sent from Taylor Swift Enterprises or whatever it might have been, right? They don't have the skills and it's too appealing, so they're going to click. I think the better we take this young and emerging field called cybersecurity, because it's only been around for 25, 30 years, right? It's not like law that's been around for 1,000 years, medicine for 200 years, electricians, plumbers, all of these industries have been around for 50 to 100 years. They've figured out what works to train their employees, train people in those areas of expertise. Cybersecurity is just young, and it's got a bit of it needs a course correction. We need to remind cybersecurity that psychology plays into everything we do. Instead of being the department of no and punishment, we need the department of yes, but here's how you do it safely and securely, and here's how you know why you're doing this and how you're doing it, and then we'll have truly a successful approach to fending off these attacks.
Yeah, I always wonder why. I mean, we're using fear-based actions to try to change behavior. So in a sense, we are using some psychology, but I feel like it's because security, the word security, does have like sort of a no connotation to it, right? Like, don't enter, no, don't do this, security is going to escort you out. Like, it's always very abrasive. Do you think that cybersecurity in its evolution, you know, I wonder if the word security has an impact on the way we are treating this whole thing? What are your thoughts on that?
It's justified, right? They say that the means justify the end, right? The end is we gotta stop people from clicking, and the means might be painful. The means might be derogatory or punishment based, but it has to be justified because the consequences are so great. Our companies are breached, right? But let me give you an analogy. Everyone listening to this, imagine parenting 100 years ago. It was don't do that or else you'll get the whip or you'll get this, right? The punishment based approach. Parenting has evolved since then where we actually realize that strapping kids is not a good idea. We're going to talk to them and we're going to show them and reward the good behaviors we want to see, because guess what? If we reward good behaviors, the bad behaviors weed out and they slow down and they become less and less and less, because the good behaviors become an internal focus of control. The child learns that they can control their angry outbursts by talking through things in their head, by focusing on positive activities in their lives. So by teaching positive skills and things, we can automatically get rid of the negative stuff, right? So if parenting works that way and dog training works that way, why doesn't cybersecurity work that way? I mean, it's common sense.
Agreed. Yeah, I live here in Las Vegas, so I was here when we had the breach of Caesars and MGM. Actually, it was MGM, where they got in through like a help desk ticket or something like that and demanded a stupid amount of millions of dollars in return for basically their system back. And they didn't pay. Caesars paid, but MGM didn't pay. And they went down for like almost 2 weeks. And it was a lot. It was huge because they have so many properties out here. So it's interesting that it's not just phishing through email. It's also, you know, these help desk or whichever way they can get
social engineering is the global term you can use, because convinced someone to do something they shouldn't. That's social engineering. Now it's delivered via email. It's called phishing. If you've gotten a text, anybody listening to this gets a text that says your toll violation is going to double every day for 10 days until you pay this toll, that's smishing, SMS, phishing. Vishing is over the phone, voice-based, or QR codes is quishing. There's, as you can imagine, there's just any which way hackers can take advantage of people through social engineering and different mediums. They have names for it. But social engineering is at its core what's happening. It happens in the real world, too. If someone wears a Verizon jumpsuit and walks into Caesar's Palace, no one's going to give them a second look, because they're there to do work. And they'll go to the electronic closet and they'll do what they do. It's all basically hiding in plain sight with social engineering.
Yeah. Yeah. And your experience, are these hackers, are they just as fast as, you know, obviously the antiviruses or the people who are building, are they just as fast? Do they adapt?
They're faster.
They're faster
because they have to just test against all the signatures with viruses. They just test against all the signatures that are out there, and they can use AI and other things to change their code enough so that they can hide from the legitimate software that's out there. And we're always reacting to them, right? So the only way to get in these kinds of attacks is to teach the positive methods, the hallmarks of physical security, of logical security, of understanding how you can identify when the domain is wrong or when you should pick up the phone and call. All of those are the positive things that you can reinforce through reward mechanisms, so the individuals internalize it. And then it lives, psychology has proven this, it changes behaviors in the long run. Punishment only changes behavior when there's a threat of punishment. And it still doesn't always work when there's a really appealing outcome in front of you, right? So why are we using it? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So in your experience, what's one of the most common yet overlooked risky behaviors employees engage in other than all the phishing?
It's a great question. And the second, in the Verizon data breach report they publish every year, they said the second most important way humans make mistakes and fail is with password hygiene. And here's the one question that anyone listening to this has to answer. Have you adopted a password manager? If the answer is no, then I can promise you You're reusing passwords everywhere you go. And you might think you're really sophisticated with a suffix or a prefix that you put on your favorite root password. Or I've heard of one or two people that have a book. They write it down and they put the book in their safe, and therefore they're protected. They are, but they aren't, because that's so inefficient that you're going to begin to cheat and reuse passwords in places that you shouldn't, right? Personal and professional, and having the same password everywhere you go. It's the only way the human brain can cope with long and strong passwords. You need 15 character randomly generated passwords stored in a password manager tied to a passkey or multi-factor to be safe online. But people don't know what they don't know with regards to cybersecurity. So they don't recognize how exposed they are by reusing passwords. One breach at this website where they didn't encrypt that password makes it perfectly visible to hackers. So if you have a root of, I don't know, let's say strawberry, and you add Yahoo at the end of strawberry because you're logging into your Yahoo account, or you add Bank of America to the end of the word strawberry, well, they can see that. And they know exactly how to try and log into any of your accounts that way, or they get you to click on a link, which is the phishing attack. So I would say, outside of phishing and social engineering, it's password hygiene. And the single most important fix for that is to adopt and learn how to use a password manager. There are all kinds of great ones out there. I'm very fond of 1Password and Bitwarden and Keeper. Those are three very good, solid password managers. That would be my advice.
Is there a risk of those password managers being hacked into?
Absolutely. No software ever written was perfect. There's always going to be flaws and bugs. However, those three that I mentioned have gone to extraordinary lengths to open their code base to third parties to review how secure have we done this? Have we made a mistake somewhere? Can you help us make it stronger? Did we miss thinking about this in a specific way? And they've had dozens of external reviews like that. Not all password managers have. There are some that I would stay away from. If you want advice on this, search my blog at cyberhoot.com/blog for password manager, and you'll get a link to either a cybersecurity overview of them or a blog article that says, here's how you pick them.
Yeah.
How to pick a good one. I have not found a security researcher who has said a password manager is worse than any other method of saving passwords or working online today.
Right.
Passkeys are coming around soon to replace a lot of the difficulties with passwords. Passkeys, we've blogged about that. You could read up on it there too. And I would say you should always adopt a passkey if you have the option, but you still need a password manager to store that passkey, that cryptographic identifier between you and the one website. The nice advantage of passkeys, just so you know, and Rami and your listeners, is that they can't be stolen and reused anywhere else. It's a cryptographic key that only works with this part of the key and the website. If it's stolen from the website and people try to use it anywhere other, even where they support passkeys, it doesn't work because it does not match. There's two parts to this key, and when they steal one half, even if they know yours, they can't make it work anywhere else because the key changes website by website.
Oh, that's
cool. So it's really, really powerful. It's the FIDO Alliance, Fast Identity Online Alliance, has done this. It's backed by all the big companies of the world. The Yahoos and the Apples and the Microsofts are all supporting it. It's going to help in the short run. It'll help, but you're still going to need to learn a password manager.
For sure. For sure. So in your experience, helped lead these large Fortune 500 companies like Vistaprint mm-hmm. and Chase Payment Tech. What do you bring to the small businesses that you help? What lessons do you bring to the small businesses that you help that are easily adopted?
Well, I take the minimum essential approach, right? In the big Fortune 500 companies, they're attacked every day, multiple times a day. They've been attacked for 25 years. And so they've had to do a lot of positive reinforcement training with their employees. They have the zero tolerance for risk calculus. When you build a cyber program at a Fortune 500 company, they have zero tolerance for risk, the banks especially. So if there's a risk, they're going to pay whatever it costs to mitigate that risk. And they're going to be able to, for example, run fake email phishing tests. And if you fail it three times, termination, right? You're gone. So people will change their behaviors out of this huge fear of losing their job, right? And that's just not a positive approach. And that approach will not work in small to medium-sized businesses. they have to tolerate all kinds of risks because there's so little resources available to protect the environments that they're protecting, which is why we see a lot, you know, there's a statistic that 11 to 100 employee companies are 15 times more likely to be breached than a smaller company and a larger company. Smaller because hackers aren't interested in, you know, nickels and dimes. They want thousands and thousands of dollars. The larger companies are kind of harder to hack and more difficult. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. You still hear about Caesars and MGM and, you know, Colonial Pipeline. But those are, you know, much rarer than the small to medium-sized business, which is our sweet spot. We're doing minimum essential 5 minutes a month for every employee, and you can really make yourself a lot harder to hack. And the owner of that business can sleep at night knowing they're doing the minimum essential. They're meeting their cyber insurance obligations with phishing tests and awareness training and governance policies and an incident response plan. All of that's provided by our company. So yeah, it's really, we took what we knew from the enterprises and we said, let's build something that is minimum essential, that's automated,
right,
that has a positive reward mechanism approach, which is just the psychology background alone is indication that that will work better. And so you're building up your employees' confidence, their efficiency, their security all at once with 5 minutes a month. You can't go wrong.
Yeah. I didn't know that there was compliance around that. That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. If you want, if you have cyber insurance, there's a questionnaire that says, I train my employees, I govern them, I test them with phishing tests. And if you say you do, but then you don't, that claim will be denied and you'll be like, you might as well not have paid for insurance.
Right.
But if you do those things, there's a greater likelihood that you won't have to make a claim because your users will spot and avoid it.
Exactly. Exactly. So you are the CEO, the co-founder. How many employees do you guys currently employ?
That's the beautiful thing. We have four co-founders that work together and we have about six. Well, we have two mostly almost full-time, you know, folks below the four co-founders. And then we have between six and eight subcontractors that 1099 to us, mostly for our virtual CISO services. But with the power of AI, we are growing rapidly with content, with development, with support. It's really a force multiplier. We're able to leverage that to really grow enormously successfully in cyber. We're profitable. We're 10 years old. You know, I think I asked ChatGPT, if you're profitable and you have this much revenue and you've been in business for 10 years, what's the likelihood of a company making it that far? 2%. Only 2% of companies get as far as we have.
Right.
And yet we're just getting started, right? So
right.
We're on the cusp of a hockey stick growth with some amazing things, you know?
And so what does leadership look like with four co-founders?
You know, it's interesting. We are all passionately rowing in the same direction to help grow our company. And we do share a bit of a meritocracy so that we discuss major investments and major decisions together, and we try to come to agreement. You know, it's not my way or the highway as the CEO. And that's been very positive and helpful in the long run. It can be challenging at times when we have passionate disagreements about, we want to go that way. No, we want to go that way. I'll be honest. But you know, cooler heads prevail and we sleep on it and we come back and we find agreement. We find the overlap and then we move forward. So it's been a real amazing journey. I've loved every minute of it and I'm very excited for our future. That's a great question, Rami. I wish more people asked that.
Yeah, I want to know more about how you guys come to an agreement. I mean, it's four people. It's hard enough when it's one leader with, you know, subordinates, but is it like majority wins?
Usually it is. Yeah.
Okay.
When we do that. And, you know, if I go back in time to the top five discussions we've had where we didn't agree on the destination or the path to the destination, I would say it averages out. Sometimes these two will overrule the other two or these three. You know, if you did a Venn diagram, each person that had the best idea was joined by two different people, you know, each of those times. So it's not always like my is the only decision. No, it's their Chuck's or Brad's or Raph's, you know?
Yeah, very cool. And what is the dynamic like? Are one of you guys or each of you, I should say, like specialty in something and then therefore
Absolutely. Yeah. So my background is psychology and consulting with virtual CISO and cyber program development, right? When you overlay those two things, a lot of the positive reinforcement stuff comes out. Chuck and Brad are both developers by classic training, and cybersecurity is what they've lived in doing development for, you know, the better part of 20 years. So they're in charge of the development arm of putting things into fruition, the vision that sometimes they come up with the vision, right? Hootfish was, I think, a mixture of all of us, but at the end of the day, they coded it in a way that is blew my mind as positive, you know, and reinforcing, and people love it. I mean, we measure every week, we measure what people say about our assignments, whether it's a video or a phishing assignment. And we give them the option of giving us a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And last week we had 93% positive ratings on our videos and 81% on our phishing was positive. That compares to an industry average of 0% of people who like fake email trick-based phishing. No one likes that.
100%. I can attest to that. I think I have what do you call that? One of those drop boxes. Mm-hmm. And I have it for the company that I work for. And so I received an email from Dropbox. I did not check. Usually I know, like when Prince Harry emails me, I'm like, you're probably not emailing me.
That's
but
right.
This Dropbox one, it got me, you know, I was just like, I do have an account, whatever. And I was just like, well, this is stupid. Like, why would you email me this with this, you know, whatever you're getting me to click on. And sure enough, it was our company that was, you know, testing or whatever. And I was like, but my immediate reaction was like, okay, I learned from it, but I'm like, this was dumb. Like, you know,
it's a negative experience, right?
Right, right.
You're supposed to be the bigger person and learn from it. And, you know, good employees will try to do that, but it's a negative experience. What if instead you did Hootfish exercises from our company, you know, over and over again, to the point where every email you get, you just hover for half a second and it's legit. Let's do it.
Continue.
If it's not legit, delete it. If it's questionable, call the person, right? Three decision points, but it becomes muscle memory. It's like going, you know, what's interesting about the human being is that when we're driving as a young driver at 18, 19, 20, we get our license and we're paying attention to everything. We're looking at all the little pieces of the road and everything that's going on. But as we get more automatic in things and, you know, the body takes over where you were not focusing solely on all of the nuances of driving because we've got it into, you know, it's kind of muscle memory, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we need you to get on these phishing emails, on all emails, where you're not having to, you know, piece apart every spelling mistake in an email. You just go boom, boom, boom. Okay, this is legit. I'm going to do it. Or boom, boom, boom. It's illegitimate. Delete it and move on with your day. And you're confident, you're efficient, and you're secure. And you're not wasting your IT department's time to go look it over and say, oh, yeah, that was a good report. It was a fish, Rami. You've just deleted it, moved on with your day. That's the hyper efficiency that we need across all of our small and medium size. And for that matter, enterprises, because enterprises are still doing it the old fashioned way with punishment and fear. It's just that they have a bigger stick to weigh. You know, they can whack you harder. So it doesn't, but it's not a good way to operate.
Yeah. What would you say as far as tech for like iPhones for phones is the most secure? I say iPhone, but that's just because I've never been hacked on my iPhone. But I know that Android is kind of open.
I've been around long enough to know that phones, as they become more and more powerful, will be targeted more. And so it used to be 10 years ago, you didn't need an antivirus on your phone or something like that, a security tool. I would say today we're right on the cusp of adopting security tools on our phones because, you know, a lot of the world operates only on a phone. They don't have a personal computer. They're doing all their banking, their financial payments, their, you know, buying and selling stuff on their phone. So there is no computer to target with a virus. So hackers are moving to, they always just follow the largest bucket of devices they can target. It used to be PCs. You know, PCs were way more prevalent than Macintosh computers or Macs from Apple. But now Apple has grown so much that now there are Mac viruses and Apple viruses targeting those computers. You might not know that. There's a blog article that we talk about the top 10 pieces of malware for targeting Apple Mac computers, you know, MacBook Airs and things of that nature. But as phones become and they already are ubiquitous, there are absolutely viruses and a malware that targets them, and it's going to become more and more prevalent to the point where you might need an antivirus or a security piece of software on your phone. So, you know, these things will come, and what you click on and what you leave enabled, if you're not using Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or any of those things, turn them off. Don't use them. You know, it's not important to be on the network every single moment of your day. You need to protect yourself when you're in public places. There's best practices.
That's really good. Where do you see, as leaders, we need to be in the next 5 years? How do we protect ourselves? What do you see with AI and its speed? when you're looking into the future, what is one or two things we can do to protect ourselves?
Well, I believe that Bill Gates was right when he said AI is going to disrupt our world more than every other technological revolution we've experienced, from the industrial age to the advent of computers to the advent of the internet to the advent of mobile devices. All of those things combined are going to be smaller in terms of the upheaval in our lives that AI will cause. Now, I'm not one of those people that believes AI will lead to the downfall of humanity necessarily. I think AI is going to be enormously disruptive. And we're already seeing it with support organizations laying off support people when an AI can answer the questions better, faster, 24/7 for lower cost. So support's going to be out. I have a dear friend of mine who's in design. She does a bunch of graphic design work. She was let off recently because they can do what she does with AI. So things are going to be disrupted. Just to give you a sense of it, you know, in 1900 in New York City, every street was covered with horse poop and buggies and horses everywhere in the street. So there was hundreds of thousands of horses and buggies. 13 years later, it was all paved and it was cars. 13 years. That was 13 years. AI is going to be 13 months or, you know,
two to three years.
Yeah. It's going to change. Right. We're getting very close to AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, where you can ask AI to do a series of tasks. Like, I need to fly on June 12th from here to Austin. And so book me a ticket and a hotel and all that. And it'll go boom, 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 and send you confirmation of your, you know, travel to the airport, parking at the airport, airport ticket, make sure you have your license or your passport, your hotel reservation, your Uber from the airport to the hotel. AGI agents will be able to do all of that. Sounds magical and amazing. If it's all for good, there could be some bad things, you know? So we're waiting to see, but AI. So my point is, to answer your question, I would definitely know how to do prompting of AI agents, how AI works, the difference between a public LLM or large language model, which means anything you put into it is free game for anyone else to look up and research. In fact, Cyberhoot has used ChatGPT and said, you know, help us understand why cybersecurity and positive reward systems are better at teaching phishing. And we've talked about psychology research and because it has all these studies that it knows about and is like agreeing with us. Yes, positive reinforcement is better. And here's why. And here's how you can approach it from a marketing and sales perspective. But guess what? Now, when people go to ChatGPT, say, I need to fish test my users in a positive way, it spits out Cyberhoot's name, because ChatGPT knows, and Lambda and all these systems, they know we're a great answer for that problem. And it's internalized in a public LLM. If you're putting sensitive and critical data into a public LLM, major faux pas. Don't do that. Have a private LLM. Copilot from Microsoft is private. It won't ingest that data into the public LLM to share with other people. So if you have health data, financial records, privileged information, critical sensitive information about your business, put it in a private LLM if you want to work through creating an email or doing some marketing or whatever you need to do. Don't put it in a public LLM, and learn why that matters.
That's so good. I didn't even know. I mean, you figure that it's public, but yeah, that's so good. I will be looking that up for sure, because I use ChatGPT quite a bit and I use Copilot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I love this conversation.
I'm glad, Rami. Thank you.
So you and your three other co-founders, you guys have built, and you can only speak for yourself, but maybe you can speak for them. You've built you know, roadmaps and frameworks and programs. But if you had to restart and you could only do one thing, what would it be?
It would be our positive reinforcement phishing test again, because that's where we pivoted from fake email testing 6 years ago. And we have been so happy with the results. I would say we'd do that all over again. Recognizing the overlapping circles of psychology and cybersecurity for behavior change was I'll never forget the moment and the fact that we identified that. We said, this really makes a difference. And then anecdotally, ever since, we've seen evidence that it's working very, very well. We have a research study at three universities going on right now to measure it empirically and prove that it works, because
so good.
You know, I come from a university background where you have to prove things. You can't just write a blog and say, this is fact, right? That's the world we live in today. The blog says so, so it has to be true. No, that actually isn't true. And we have anecdotal evidence, but we need empirical evidence to prove that what we do works better, both from an effect, behavior change perspective, and an affect. The experience of changing your behaviors was more wonderful and
positive.
Enjoyable and positive. Yeah, maybe if you whip people, they'll stop doing bad things, but the experience is so horrible that you can't get away with it. You can't strap children anymore, and there's a good reason for that. You got to reward the good behaviors and teach coping mechanisms. That's what we're doing in psychology, and that's what we're doing in cybersecurity now.
Yeah, I often tell people when they're, you know, making a sign for something, like, don't open this door. And I'm like, well, all they're going to see is open this door, right? You kind of want to say, open that door, right?
Yeah.
Like with an arrow pointing. You want it to be positive. You want to tell them what you want them to do. Stop telling them what you don't want them to do.
Exactly.
The mind does not comprehend, you know, as well as, oh, you want me to open that door. Got it.
You
okay.
get it, Rami. Understood. You're dialed in. I love it.
So is that your competitive advantage? Do you find that other companies have adopted this positive reinforcement like you guys have?
No, unfortunately not. I think if I had a legacy, it would be to refocus cybersecurity into a positive. I think there's room for all of us to adopt positive reward mechanisms. Some are doing a modicum of it, but nobody has really adopted it as their driving force like we have. Many, many of our competitors that we replace every day are just developing a better negative experience. You know, we can do it better. We can do it more realistic. We can do it more fast. We can do it more with more automation. All of that to say, it's still a negative experience for the end user, and it doesn't teach the positive skills that you want to replace the bad behaviors with. So that's really the challenge. And we've got a patent filed on this. It hasn't been approved, but I'm hopeful that it will be. We have this empirical research study. When we combine three things in our future, I talk about hockey stick growth. When I look at our company, if we get our SOC 2 Type 2 assessed audit opinion that says we're doing things securely, effectively, repeatably, with evidence to prove it, and we combine that with an empirical research study that says we're better from an effect and an affect, and we get that, feed that data into our patent application that says, yeah, we are unique because everyone's doing it on a punishment basis, and here's a study that says that doesn't work, and here's a study that says we do it different and better, and then they should be able to approve our patent, and we can then defend it potentially.
That's so cool. It's so cool to talk to a company that's like in it. You know what I mean? Like you guys have proven it over the last 6 years, but you guys are like right at the cusp of making it a thing for people to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And I love that. What is a final thought you would like to leave with the audience?
Well, I think if anyone that's listening to this says, you know what, I'm ready to try. I'm ready to go with my gut and believe in the parental analogy or the psychology analogy, all of the evidence that I've been talking about, and I want to go and try this, reach out to sales@cyberhoot.com. Anyone that listens to this, if they put in the name of your podcast, we'll give them a 20% discount for life.
That's awesome.
on their registration. So when you register for a free trial, which we don't charge you for 30 days, you asked, well, how'd you hear about us? You could put in ChatGPT, but no, put in leadership of the name of the podcast, right? Because LFH is fine, or, you know, leadership for, what is it?
Leadership from the heart.
From the heart. Leadership from the heart, or any version of that, will give you 20% off for life on your subscription to us as a direct. So yeah, we'd love to have you. So that's what I would leave people with, is to give it a try for free, just to see what your employees say. If they're like all the other employees in here, we're going to give you 80% positive ratings on Hootfish and upper 90s in videos. And you'll be doing some of the minimum essential to protect yourself from harm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's growing and it needs to be taken seriously, like you said, a second nature, right? It does. Mm-hmm. I think we're right there because you're right. Everything is developing so quick, so fast, and AI is just 10xing it. So definitely we'll have it in the show notes. I just jotted down the 20% off using Leadership from the Heart. So we'll make sure that all your links are in the show notes. Where can people find you if they wanted to find you online?
Well, you can get me at sales@cyberhoot.com. That comes right to my inbox. And you can visit cyberhoot.com. I would say you could register for our newsletter, which goes out once a month with some emerging threats. We talk about all kinds of different ways companies and hackers are trying to attack, attack companies. That's at cyberhoot.com/newsletters. We have a library of cybersecurity terms, everything from what is a Bitcoin to what were those NFTs? Remember NFTs were all the rage?
It was.
A lot of people are like, I never figured out what that was. Well, go to cyberhoot/cybrary and search for NFT, and you'll be able to read and watch a video on what it is. And any other term that you're wondering about, you can see there all for free. Oh, and we do give Cyberhoot away for free. I always forget to mention this, but if you're an individual mm-hmm. and you want to have a lifetime subscription to Cyberhoot to get a monthly video and a quarterly phishing test, subscribe to it for free at cyberhoot.com/individuals with an S on the end of that, individuals, plural. And you'll be able to sign up and register for a free access. Our hope is that, A, we're changing the world one person at a time, but if you really like what you see, and most people do, you'll bring it up to your IT department. Or if you're an owner of a company, you'll hire us to train all your staff. And so that'll be our win-win scenario.
Very cool. Very cool. That's almost like an AOL little nugget there.
We're not leaving millions of discs. How are you old enough to know what those AOL CDs were? I mean, shoot, those were posters. You look like you're only 30 years old. So what the heck? That was like 40 years ago.
I'm almost 40. So I was right there.
No. Oh my gosh.
I was an AIM girl. But yeah, that's very cool. I like it. Very cool. Well, Craig, thank you so much. I love this conversation. I feel like you guys have definitely done justice to cybersecurity by bringing the human aspect to it and making it a positive experience. And I want to thank you for that on behalf of everyone, because that's really cool.
From my heart to yours, I really enjoyed this. I love the podcast. And I think, your listeners will hopefully get something out of today's conversation.
For sure.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And that concludes our episode of Leadership from the Heart, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out Cyberhoot and Craig and, take advantage of that free lesson. If you find it useful, like he said, just go ahead and give it a try with your company. Again, we want to thank you for listening. And if you liked what you heard, please like and subscribe. See you next time.